Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 23rd, 2007. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I will host today. I'm with the Economic Section of the Executive Intelligence Review News Service. Now, you may know that our posted topic on our site, thelarouchepub.com, for this week's radio show, focused on the strategic implications of the Lyndon LaRouche International webcast, which was June 21st, that's Thursday, and it's been archived. You can watch it in video or listen in audio, and you will soon have it posted. LaRouchePub.com, which is EIR News Service and EIR Online, is going to have the full transcript. And we're going to discuss this today, and I'm glad that we have here in the studio Tony Papert. Welcome, Tony.
Hi.
Who knows much about many aspects of this historic material, dynamite material LaRouche presented. And what we have been going on today is the conclusion of a 4 days of action period in Washington, D.C., with about 70 plus LaRouche Youth Movement organizers having been present all over Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill and so forth, from the eastern states, even from Canada. And they're still creating a fuss here in the east. So we are very pleased to have for this discussion two Pacific Coast LaRouche Youth Movement organizers. So I want to welcome from Seattle, Linda Vu. Hi.
Hello.
And in the Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area, Ben Denniston. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
And you're emeritus LaRouche Youth Movement War Room, right?
Yeah, I guess that's the title.
You have special insight into strategic implications. Now, let me just say this, is that, again, I said people should look on the LaRouchePAC.com website of the Political Action Committee of Lyndon LaRouche for his presentation of June 21st and the discussion. And I mentioned also our EIR news service, LaRouchePub.com. And LaRouche himself today was in discussions with the editorial crew, said you could also title his remarks in the following way: What God Told Kepler and You Need to Know. So that's why I recommend you have to know what he's talking about. And let's just do this. Tony, you've been in discussions with Lynn personally this week. You know what he's talking about. How do you want to lead off when it comes to strategic implications?
Well, let me just lead by noting that since the webcast, Lord Goldsmith, Britain's Attorney General, has announced that he's resigning from his position on the same day Tony Blair steps down, which is the 27th this week. Goldsmith, but notwithstanding that, there's many people in Parliament and others who are going to insist on his testimony. Goldsmith was apparently one of the people involved in squashing the investigation of BAE scandal around middle of December 2006. This occurred just after Dick Cheney's trip to Saudi Arabia, which we've written a lot about, which was on November 25th. It's not that Blair and company work for Cheney. It's the other way around. Cheney works for Blair and company, especially through his wife, Lynn Cheney, who's a longstanding British agent or British asset, whose academic work was on Matthew Arnold, known as a British literary critic of the 19th century, but actually the pre-founder of the Fabian Society of British Imperialists, and also on W.B. Yeats, William Butler Yeats, the so-called Irish poet, and who was a fascist organizer. Interestingly enough, Lynn Cheney wrote her master's thesis on W.B. Yeats largely explicitly as a fascist organizer. I mean, this guy was being studied by boomers of Lynn Cheney's generation as a modernist. But she's the only one I know who called him by that name, an unsuccessful fascist political organizer who was trying to form a fascist party in Ireland, and obviously admired this as part of her general thrust of being an agent for British imperialists and come fascists. So it was Goldsmith who was involved in squashing that inquiry. He has yet to explain exactly his role in it. Now he's quit. One aspect that Lynn brought out in that webcast is that, as people probably realize, the original breaking of the scandal this time around during May and June didn't come from the U.S. We were quick to pick up on it, but it came actually from Britain, and most visibly from the BBC and the Guardian newspaper, who brought the scandal up again after, as I said, it had been squashed at the end of last year. So these are, of course, British. They're not anti-British. They're not anti-patriotic. They're not even necessarily anti-imperialist. But it's a group in Britain that realizes that this consolidation, the attempted consolidation of a British world dictatorship in a somewhat changed form, which is being brought to a head today, among other things, from within BAE as an instrumentality, has gone too far, and that if it's allowed to proceed, even if it succeeds in short term in creating that dictatorship, if it's allowed to proceed, the result is immediate disaster for the world. So that's the background out of Britain. It's the same group, as Lynn pointed out, who from Britain have joined us in exposing the global warming hoax of Al Gore and many others. Again, as part of the same thing, a one-world British imperialist drive, globalization and global warming, which has reached the point where even these people see that if it's allowed to proceed any further, there'll be disaster. So then a part of the same thing again, the consolidation of world finances under the hedge funds, almost all of them operating out of British-controlled offshore centers, principally the Cayman Islands, but also the Isle of Man, Jersey, other Channel Islands, and so on, which have completely overshadowed our banks, taken over our banks, looting our banks, which used to run the financial system, but and are themselves on the verge of collapse or in a somewhat hidden process of collapse right at this minute. So it's these people from within Britain itself who have seen that that this thing has gone too far, that it's got to be turned around immediately before it's too late. And so they pointed to BAE and what we've exposed, as Lynn did in that webcast, as a British black money operation, which has been instrumental behind the scenes in world history for especially the past 20 years, with a black money fund of $80 to $100 billion stemming from their so-called Al Yamama contract with Saudi Arabia in 1985. Prince Bandar's official biographer has admitted in writing his biography, many of the rather small black operations, black weapons operations, in which that black money fund was used. But he's accounted for, perhaps in these revelations, he's accounted for a few million dollars rather than $80 to $100 billion, which is the extent of the thing. So this thing has been brought to the light of day out of Britain. American media have been very slow to pick up on it, but it's begun to happen. I just learned of a Los Angeles Times article from the 15th. Which treated it in some detail. CNN did so last week. It's known that the U.S. Department of Justice, there's multiple sources on this, U.S. DOJ, has initiated a preliminary investigation of BAE preparatory to possible full-dress criminal investigation under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The a DOJ source quoted in the Los Angeles Times said it was simply too big to ignore. This obviously is true. So that was the some of the immediate background of Lynn's talk. As I said, another title he gave for that talk was the BAE scandal, the world's biggest loose end.
Well, one thing I'd like people to know, that about 25,000 copies of a summary form of the key points of this nature of this BAE scandal, even that's being covered up here in the United States tremendously, did circulate around Washington, D.C. in this days of action of the LaRouche Youth Movement to institutions on Capitol Hill and just generally on the streets and in Northern Virginia and elsewhere. So this is, I think this is only just the kind of beginning. But let me ask you, Tony, further, or Linda or Ben, you can jump in if you wish. But
I have a question real quick.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Maybe on, I was wondering about this this kind of split in the British establishment where I think Lynn was first really kind of saw this with the, around our expose of the global warming hoax. And he had just one guy in particular, this guy, Lord Monckton, come out challenging, out of Britain, come out challenging Gore, challenging the whole, this whole fraudulent claim. And then Lynn said, look, this is a split in the British establishment. Some people don't want to go with the full implications of what the circles around Gore and these guys are doing. But I was wondering, Tony, if you knew, like, what would be more of the outlook of these people? I mean, how far would they go in, say, attacking Gore and this more radical faction? I mean, you said yourself you don't think they're necessarily anti-imperial. But what do you think they're looking to move towards in terms of shaping the direction right now?
We don't have the sort of inside information which the question implies, but they, as you know, they are actually Lord Monckton in particular. So he's a member of the House of Lords. He's a mathematician by training. He conducted an investigation he was the chairman of a committee in the House of Lords, which conducted an investigation of global warming with a full panel of witnesses from both sides, something which has never been done here in the U.S. Congress, and came to the conclusion that it was a fraud. And he participated in the British Channel 4 special. You mentioned the Great Global Warming Hoax. And furthermore, he has challenged Al Gore to a public debate. He has a number of U.S., among other institutions, co-signing that challenge, and he's publishing it in an ad, as an ad, roughly a quarter page or a little less, in apparently every significant U.S. daily. He's done about four or five so far, including Washington Post, New York Times, Washington Times. The we see also similar reflections of similar things from continental Europe, which also reflect different things in continental Europe. But we see it in, for instance, the German refusal to go along with U.S. and British provocations against Russia, like the plan to build so-called anti-missile installations on the Russians' border, which has come out of this administration, but really come out of the other faction in Britain. We see it in the way in which the Schiller Institute, another organization, co-thinker organization of Lyndon LaRouche, the Schiller Institute Denmark's proposals for magnetic levitation rail systems in Denmark, linking it to Germany and other countries, has now been published by major press, not only in Denmark but in Germany. So these, in part, also reflect this development from the British Isles. But really, the rest of what we can say is negative, which is pretty much what I said before. Whatever positive plans these people in Britain may or may not have, and they may not all share the same ones, it's clear that they do realize that this current imperial drive, imperial globalization hedge fund drive, is just now at the point of disaster if it's allowed to proceed any further. And I mean, as well, I should say on the other issues I named, for instance, these provocations against Russia, which are being steered by another faction in London, the same people are publicly disagreeing with that.
And do you have further, Ben, on that? Because LaRouche used many kinds of ways to make things clear. That's an understatement, you know, but in other words, how it's intelligible to someone at this present time, this whole business. He spoke of a modern-day manifestation of what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. I mean, a lot of people are saying it's like a mega Iran-Contra, you know what I mean? A black bag, dirty tricks on a scale that Iran-Contra was just a fraction of. Or a parallel government, and mainly the British East India Company reincarnated, right?
Yes, right. I mean, and really, Iran-Contra per se was a relatively small part of this same thing, because the background for launching of this British-Saudi-Al-Yamama deal was the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s, and the fact that Saudi Arabia felt menaced by the fighting right on its border, the Iran-Iraq War going on right on its borders, potential repercussions. They wanted a package of defense hardware package from the U.S., mostly F-15 planes. And the same faction of Poindexter North, which went to Iran and offered a cake to the Ayatollah and so forth, that same faction cut off the possibility of a Saudi arms purchase from the U.S., and on that day, Prince Bandar flew his private Airbus to London, went to 10 Downing Street, met with Margaret Thatcher, and they concluded a handshake deal, which was Al-Yamama, an arms deal now running for 22 years. And actually, what Tony Blair was trying to do before leaving office was to extend the term another 5 years.
And one very high-impact thing LaRouche brought out, this is oversimplifying it, but he said you're dealing with something that's big enough and bad enough and has this character that could encompass a 9/11 operation. You're kind of in a 9/11 system, he said.
Yeah. Have you had an idea how much money it would take to put together something the scale of 9/11? And he pointed out that in January 2001, in a webcast which is available in the LaRouche Pub site, in January 2001, he forecast 9/11, not in the sense of flying a plane into a building or into the World Trade Towers, but he said that this crisis, this financial crisis, is outside the ability of the Bush administration to handle. And we can expect a massive provocation of the type of the burning of the Reichstag by the Nazis in early 1933, which was used to give dictatorial powers to Hitler the next day. Of course, they accused the communists in the burning of the Reichstag, but it's been very well established since. That was actually the Nazis who did it themselves. So he said this is the pattern for the kind of provocation we can expect in the term of this Bush administration. And we didn't merely say it, but we were actively at that time looking for preparations for that sort of provocation. We found a number of them, but not the particular things which led to 9/11. But that's the sense in which he predicted it. That was that provocation, which the intention was to give dictatorial powers to the Bush administration, which was even then actually just run by Vice President Cheney, to give them dictatorial powers out of that crisis by the end of the first day. And the attempt was made, as is pretty much now on the public record. It didn't quite work. But that's the sense in which he forecasted. And you know, he said at the time, if you think that this kind of thing could have been done by some small group of Arabs or whoever, that's ridiculous. This was a major operation done on the scale of a government or agencies which have the equivalent power and budgets of a government. And now we see the accumulation of this massive off the books black budget of $80 to $100 billion within a key agency of British imperialism, BAE.
Well, that raises another theme about this, which is who's going to have the guts to do something? I mean, this is just maybe the beginnings of making clear and getting out the nature of this at large around the world. But many of the questions on Thursday to Mr. LaRouche and the webcast was, what are we going to do with the Democratic Party? They've been in there. I think Linda in Seattle, well, you've both been putting individual congressmen on the hot seat at town meetings and elsewise. But what do you say about the way or the process involved in getting Cheney out of there?
Well, what in Seattle, what we've been doing is going after global warming in Al Gore. You had this festival going on in Seattle called the Fremont Festival, and it's just once a year where people basically get naked. Boomers getting naked. But we've had this idea off of this joke that Al Gore is protecting Dick, where on condoms we would put a picture of Dick Cheney that says Al Gore protecting Dick, and on the back we would tell the Seattle population, we have the phone number of Jim McDermott on there, to call and his to the H.R. 333, the House resolution that was introduced by Kucinich for impeachment, and that this happened last Saturday. And during the day when we call into their office, we had intelligence that their phones were just going off the hook.
Tremendous.
On impeachment.
Oh, that's great.
So we've been keeping that up.
No place to hide.
Yeah, especially when Jim McDermott, with his constituency, completely just wimped out when they had confronted him on the matter in a town hall.
Do you want to say a bit more about that? I mean, for those who don't know, it was for me when you first reported, it's a very striking illustration of what people who are just reading the daily press don't realize at all is going on in this country.
Yeah. Well, Jim McDermott is the congressman of the greater Seattle area, and he's known as the sort of big, round, white-haired, jolly, anti-Democrat, for peace. And he's usually pretty decent on voting matters. But when you had a town hall meeting about a month ago, you had about 150 to 200 constituents there, and also the LYM. And we didn't even have to bring up the impeachment question. Once the questions session started, you basically had a near riot started from the room haranguing him on the matter of impeachment. And to everyone's axiom about this guy, he completely just showed his true colors and saying, no, I won't go for impeachment. I won't go for impeachment. It will never happen. While you just had the whole room who was there for the matter. And it was a good counterpoint, because it really it really showed this sort of a real sort of a Shakespearean play coming out, where you had the missing necessity there was leadership, and that's where we came in with that question. But yeah, McDermott, ever since then, we've been making sure that the Northwest population definitely gives him a mouthful, so we can definitely change him like we're changing guys like Kucinich.
That's right. And Representative Pete Stark is from the West Coast, right? Was that in your area?
Pete Stark,
Ben, or maybe.
Yeah, he's down here in the Bay Area, just in the East Bay. And we saw him here. He usually does these, he'll come into town for a day or two, and he'll do two or three meetings in different cities in his district. And, you know, we hit a couple of his, there's this freshman congressman, McNerney, who's a little bit east, right outside the Bay Area. We went to a couple of his town hall meetings also recently, and then a couple weeks ago, Lynn Woolsey had a town hall meeting. She's just north of San Francisco. So we've had a number of opportunities to really intersect these congressmen. And we found, you know, a very similar response. The population, you know, really just needs a little bit of a kind of a push, a little bit of a direction. And they know we need Cheney out. You know, they know these guys are no good. And they know these congressmen are just full of it when they say, you know, impeachment's off the table, we should just wait. So we've had a lot of fun in these things as well, really just kind of letting the dams loose, so to speak, I think, as Mr. LaRouche put it once, about really unleashing the demand in this population on these congressmen, to get these congressmen, put the pressure on them. But it's been a lot of fun organizing, especially around this this breaking story with the BAE, which is really, it's only been, you know, about a week now since we've actually been taking this out in the field, talking to the population about this. But it's really added a whole new kind of element to the organizing that's been really, it's only just the beginning of it. I've had personally, and you know, other people here at this local have had some pretty exciting responses around that, where being in the Bay Area, it's a liberal area, you have San Francisco right here, so there's a lot of this kind of surface, like, yeah, I agree, right, these guys are bad, even a lot of agreement on impeachment, you know, we should remove Cheney, a lot of this stuff. But then, you know, and once you engage in any kind of discussion that goes beyond just that, there is a real lack of understanding of any kind of historical depth for where we're at right now. So this whole breaking story around the BAE actually demonstrating the whole British angle, you know, and then making the point that Cheney, like Tony was saying, Cheney through his wife, the policy in Washington has been written out of London, and that trying to actually bring the discussion to the concept of globalization, trying to get people to actually understand, you know, it's not about even just corruption per se. It's not about just money for Halliburton per se. It's a question of, you know, what's going to be the state of the world. Is it going to be globalization, where you have private finance run out of London, largely basically running the world, or can we actually get the United States? And the point being, one thing we're really trying to get across to people, and it's been fun to really demonstrate to these people and kind of gets people to really change the way they look at what's going on, is the fact that the United States is a target of this. The United States as a nation, as a republic, a sovereign republic, is actually a target of these policies. That's not coming from the United States. So it makes for some very interesting discussions. You really change the way people begin to think about these things, and, you know, then the question of impeachment of Cheney takes on a whole new light. And the questions of Franklin Roosevelt, LaRouche's work to bring back the policies of Franklin Roosevelt, you know, what that really meant. You know, someone acting on the constitution of our nation as a sovereign republic to defend our population and other populations against this kind of British imperial policy. So it's been really exciting taking this out into the field.
What kind of responses have you been getting?
Kind of like I said, there's a lot of, you know, there's generally a lot of surface agreements, and then a lot of people provoked. And you say, well, have you heard about this BAE thing? And they'll be like, oh, what's that? And you say, well, you know, this is basically, this could be the source of funding for actually creating a lot of the conflicts that are going on the, you know, throughout the Middle East, different places in the world. And people kind of stop, and once you get into it a little bit, there's a lot of curiosity. I mean, you know, frankly, here it's very interesting because you can say, like, we need to impeach Cheney. People will say, yeah, I know. You know, they agree. They're like, it's not going to happen. It hasn't happened yet with some of the demoralization we see sometimes. But then when you bring up this other element and actually put it in a deeper historical context and actually connect it to history, and people actually get a sense of where we're at right now in this process of development, I find it to be very provoking with people. A lot of people just really kind of, okay, they actually want to have a stay at it. They kind of get a serious intention that I want to figure out more about this. I want to know
Terrific.
What you're talking about.
One thing happened in Virginia because the Queen came here for the 400th anniversary of Jamestown. So on the streets of Northern Virginia, at least in the last few weeks, where people get the aha, what's she doing here? I don't believe this anniversary is the reason. She must have been up to no good. So, but this, putting it in terms of history. Let me ask, Linda, one thing is, we talked about this before the show, but last week, Alicia, your colleague from Seattle, said that on the floor of your office was this gigantic banner that said, you can just, well, I'll say what she said, but then what happened? It has, the title was Bearing Straight Toward Impeachment, with a maglev on the left, the bearing straight on the middle, and Cheney on the right. Has that been helpful to provoke people?
Yeah. Especially, I mean, the most provoking thing is the maglev project itself. Because this is the missing solution. That's sort of like the aha, that's where we need to go. Where if we just give people the idea of where the economic direction we need to go in, and completely excite people on how there's a complete potential to build away from the direction that the British and Cheney's taking us. You just get an automatic human excitement around it. So that's been a great flank. But on the BAE matter, a lighter lunge that we've been using in the field is, did you know Dick Cheney's been involved with your mama?
And they say no. What do they say?
Well, the funny thing is that it works. People, I guess it might be a cultural, more of a cultural aspect, yeah. But yeah, people, it work, and it'd be a good a switch to actually ya mama and the Souths and whatnot. But yeah, we were discussing earlier how. Well, for one thing, I'm going to switch it up. For one thing, in Seattle, is that there's just been a huge escalation for recruitment. And it's the excitement around that is completely being inspired by the cultural work around the music, Bach and Kepler. And since the semester's been out, we've been just having contacts coming in and out the office. We have a couple of regulars and one young gentleman who's coming around a lot. And he's just, since he watched the webcast, he just raised this question to one of the organizers, to Alicia, actually, is what is this question of infinitesimal? So that's a good sign when you have fresh young people that we meet off the street who begin to start thinking about these questions.
You had I saw a write-up of something you gave a name to, Talk to Strangers. Maybe that bears on Call Jim McDermott's office, but can you? What were you talking about? The Talk to Strangers campaign?
Uh-huh. You mean from Seattle?
Yes.
I think it's this open door policy of ours, where it's the connotation is just bring people in, and for one thing, what happened? I think Wednesday was to give people more sense of the drive for impeachment is that we've been keeping in touch with an aide of McDermott's. And my fellow organizer, my friend Francesca, had called in, and she had talked to this aide, and she lunged with that lunge on your mama.
Okay.
And it just completely, I mean, the freaked the guy out, because he began to yell at her over the phone in front of, I guess, their whole office. But his real frustration wasn't coming from us. It's just the fact that his whole dynamics around the office is centered around him getting calls around impeachment. And that they're showing frustration on the matter because him personally, he probably wanted impeachment, but his congressman isn't going for it. So he just got completely frustrated with us, hangs up, and he goes out downtown to take a walk where he runs into us on the streets in downtown with that banner, with the big banner. And so he engages in a nearly hour-long discussion with one of us. And the funny thing was that right after that discussion, we also made another poster. This is called Jim McDermott Support HR 333. While we were singing, you would just have excited people coming up. We'd give them the phone number of Jim McDermott. They'd call while they're on the streets, flip out their cell phone, dial the number. They go, I'm calling in because my vote's in for impeachment. Tell your congressman. While in the background, you hear us singing about impeachment. So yeah, you have this great dynamic we're going towards.
That's great. So, no place to hide.
Yeah. Nope.
And the other thing, either Ben or Linda, but Tony may talk about this, Lynn was stressing a certain characterization. I mean, the period we're in is generalized warfare. I mean, look around the world. But this, I guess, people feel it isn't just Iraq, or I'm asking you. I mean, the part of the demand, the rage that you've just been describing in the town hall or on the streets is we gotta get the bums out. Is that what you're saying? I mean, is that the kind of sense you have? That people do appreciate, at least, even if the media, they don't know what's going on, they don't have the information, but it's with both the warfare, I don't know what they think about the economy, but what do you think?
Yeah, definitely people are, you definitely get a sense, feel a very clear recognition that we're in it's kind of a crisis condition. I mean, it seems more and more you run into people in the street who, are older, they've been through a certain amount, they lived through Kennedy assassination, lived through the Vietnam War, they lived through the 80s, through Bush Sr., and I'll get people, it seems increasingly who'll say, this is the worst I've seen
right.
this country. Mm-hmm. The worst situation I've seen us in, and then it seems that they seem to be recognizing, not just one or another aspect. Yeah, you see the general economic decay, physical breakdown of the United States economy, and they see the drive for what more and more people openly admit they recognize as fascism. and with Dick Cheney and Bush and the war policy and whatnot. So, but then we're just playing a crucial role in actually getting people to look at this from the highest level, trying to look at it from the standpoint that, that LaRouche is looking at it, you know, bringing up the fact, the whole, the British angle, and then the counter to that, and what it's, a lot of just, you know, a lot of issues that just people just don't really know much about the history of the United States or where we're at right now. But even just simple discussions on, say, Franklin Roosevelt, and what Franklin Roosevelt actually did, and Franklin Roosevelt fights with Churchill, and the fact that our nation represents something different than that. It tends to shape and change the way people look at it, and people start to put pieces together. And then the discussions on things like the Bering Strait Project, you know, the Eurasian land bridge, you know, rebuilding the United States through credit, through major projects, it tend to get a lot of excitement around these things, especially when you can situate it all from the highest standpoint. So it's like it seems to be that people are recognizing we're at a certain breaking point. There is a general recognition I'm seeing, at least increasingly, where people know it just can't keep going like this, and there needs to be a certain change. And then we're there just providing the critical, historical, proper understanding from which to look at what we're seeing right now, but then also the solutions. Like Linda was saying, where to go in the future.
Let me ask you one aspect of this is because it's so visible. I wonder what you're finding. You take the attention to Russia, the demonizing of President Putin in some of the weekly news magazines, and so forth. On the other hand, with the general population, the mood being, look, the whole world's gone crazy. The economy, all the warfare. Do people pick up on what LaRouche is saying about the potential and what our mission is to lead the way out of this, and what Russia could be doing, what Putin's doing, or how is that perceived in any special way? I don't know, Linda in Seattle.
I would generally meet people who haven't heard of the Russian proposals. Except actually coming from certain Russians themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And but with this, it's this question of what you were asked earlier, is what is the general reaction to how desperate things are?
Mm-hmm.
Is that I thought it was very striking how Mr. LaRouche ended up with his speech yesterday is around a real pedagogy of the past 3,000 years of science. Mm-hmm. and the point of science discoveries of universal physical principle and really getting a sense that you're a true human being is us, the LaRouche youth movement, very, very honestly and rigorously working on these very tough questions in the office and working with each other and creating a real environment around that and bringing that on the street where even though you might not necessarily know every detail about everything, the history, the science, is that you really get a sense of method of how to think causally, that it's really us, the youth movement, actually partaking right now in the streets every day and showing people how to think and sort of poking at people it's what is changing people's cynicism and pessimism.
And LaRouche also noted that this was the first webcast where he had brought out the subject, which is, you know, the LIMS reinvestigation of science.
Hmm.
Right? He said that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I've never done this. I've done this before in classes mm-hmm. and in other, but I've never done it in a webcast like this because people really weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think some of them are because they're so scared of what's going to happen that some of them are at the point where they can make this breakthrough or begin to make it.
Mm-hmm. I'll even go farther as to surmise that he's actually being completely inspired by the basement work.
Yeah, right.
That's why he designed his speech that way.
The Basement Foundation, he called it, right? Or maybe that was today. People should know he gave, right, a terrific briefing to the LaRouche Youth Movement by special connection just a few hours ago. Well, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, just the whole the basement work and the emphasis that Lynn's been putting on it, just it is very exciting because given the political situation and it all, like the way Tony mentioned, the way Mr. LaRouche put it, that people are now kind of, they recognize things are bad, they begin to actually start questioning the way they think about things, there's more of an openness to a deeper discussion, which, you know, is the substance of all the work we're doing, this intellectual program, the cultural work. It's actually get, you know, much deeper into these questions of, you know, how is it that you know things? What is the method by which people are operating under in the way they operate day to day? And so it's just this whole science curriculum, the music work is very exciting right now, given the way this is accelerated and taken off, and taking this into the field and being able to use this in the field, being able to take people through, you know, the way they're attempting to understand history or politics or economics, and be able to work them through their ideas versus what physical reality is, and then to develop that method to be able to actually get people to reflect on Socratically on their own thinking, their own understanding of these things, and to really uplift people's minds to a higher understanding. And just, you really start to get a sense of the real potential of the youth movement, our movement generally, with what Mr. LaRouche has built for, you know, real cultural, political change in the United States.
Right. Thinking of things before the show began, LaRouche's formulation, and one part of what he said on the 21st that bears on what you're saying, is that there is a situation that's being created, which is an environment where people at large can start to gain a sense of freedom to do right, which they haven't been doing. And this is the means to showing courage. In other words, what you're describing is providing the environment for people who may not know everything, but they can start to find courage instead of this gutlessness we were just talking about a half hour ago, where people who should know better then turn tail. Let me ask you one thing, Ben. You're out there in California, which has seen, I mean, the impact over the years and this work you've been doing in the institution of the Democratic Party of California, which is the biggest in the country. And still you're in there in Schwarzenegger land and George Shultz and so forth. Is there anything to be brought out, especially by what you've seen in Sacramento or the process down in San Diego in the state convention or even in the Bay Area where you are? In what we're talking about?
Really, it's just, you know, like you said, as a function of the work we've been doing over a number of years,
uh-huh.
It's an increasing openness. We took a trip up to Sacramento recently, and there's definitely a higher level of openness, and then also, you know, higher level of respect for what we're doing, what we've done as an organization. And then we see that, obviously, with the state convention. We had, you know, two of our youth members elected, Quincy O'Neill as the African American Caucus in California, the vice chair, and Wynil Innocentes, the Filipino Caucus. It's just, you know, the work we've been doing, working with this organization, and just the fact that, you know, Lynn and our intelligence staff were just right. We have such a, just this obviously has been demonstrated a superior strategic understanding of where we're at historically. That, we've been saying that, we've been demonstrating that, intersecting with a certain physical reality, like we've been discussing a little bit, is starting to seep into people, and people are beginning to recognize where we're at. It's just creating an environment for, you know, what we're seeing, which is, like I was saying, increased levels of just openness to collaboration, discussions. I mean, this Franklin Roosevelt Legacy Club, which is a club that we started within the Democratic Party of California. So it's a Democratic Party club in California. And it's becoming a real institution, a place where we're interacting with, you know, higher and higher level people within the Democratic Party of California. They're coming to speak, they're coming to see what we have to say, they're coming to interact with the youth because they, you know, recognize what I was just going through in terms of what we're doing and the importance of what we're doing. So it's exciting. It's an exciting process.
Right. Well, I don't want to veer off this, but I'd be interested in this, Tony, about some of the pace of events on this whole BAE affair. Let me put it that way. Even though the lid's on the media coverage, you mentioned that we've hardly had anything in the U.S. We had CNN and a little bit. But just in the last 48 hours, it's come to pass that President Bush and Tony Blair, after a kind of telephonic conference yesterday, signed. Then I understand we were told the document where Bush signed was flown over to, probably on a military jet to London for Blair, or vice versa. So they signed this deal where there's to be no...
They say they signed a treaty, but Bush thinks if he can get through a treaty without Senate approval, which is against the Constitution.
In other words, or you might say what this is. I mean, I was just saying it's...
They signed a treaty that U.S. arms exports to Britain would no longer be subject to licensing, which means that, unlike any other country, the U.S. trusts Britain not to reroute American arms to locations which the United States doesn't want to sell arms to. Into ongoing wars, civil wars, insurgencies, and so on, which we don't want to do, at least according to law. So it allows the British to do this. Now, and as a congressman pointed out in calling into the LaRouche's webcast on Thursday, Bush doesn't even have the right to do this. I mean, a treaty has to be ratified. And what has not been publicized is that simultaneously, the British are going for the same deal inside Europe, that the EU will sell arms to each other without licensing. So that means Britain becomes the one location worldwide where they can sell arms to anybody, and also arms, you know, parts. But in any case, they can sell weapons to anybody without any oversight or regulations whatsoever. Arms from any place, well, arms from almost any place, i.e. arms from Europe or arms from the U.S., which covers a lot of arms. So between these two deals, the one they're trying to get in the EU and the one which they think they just got with Bush's signature, they can push black weapons, they can use their black funds to push black weapons any place, including ones from the U.S. and other European countries.
And just to, on the footnote to this then, the record that's been squashed, you mentioned that Dick Cheney intervened to get this special investigation in, well, Tony Blair canceled a special investigation in England in December 2006. But it's already out without a whole lot of investigation, right, that they've found. You take Iraq, they're finding Berettas, which of course are famous, they're made in Italy, but that still had the registration that had been shipped and distributed out of, guess where, England. I mean, in other words, the record is clear, even if you haven't had a deep investigation.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So I'm not... back to Ben and Linda, I'm not just saying it's information that changes someone's mind. Not at all. I mean, there's been plenty. This BAE systems affair hasn't even been unknown on some level for 20 years. It's just that it hasn't been in context and people haven't put it together and, you know, speaking of courage or intelligence, that's been lacking. But do you think, what do you think about the pace of things? Linda, you were describing more the recruitment process, the excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just figure it's going to pick up, or that's what you'd say, I guess.
Well, this BAE scandal is, we've only been organizing with it for a week, and from what I'm hearing in D.C. is that those guys have just been recently getting out the Jeff Steinberg article, and so have we in Seattle. We've just gone out about 5,000, nearly 5,000 of them. That's a question that I kind of have for Tony, is what direction are we definitely going to take with this, with the direct congressional work? I'm sure we're going to go to the relevant committees and present them with this matter, but is this that's a question. I'm sure that this is going to create a whole new dynamic in the near future. The question is, I'm interested in knowing maybe specifically how. Maybe that's would unfold itself, but.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen in different ways, but one is that the permission from CFIUS, Committee on Foreign Investments to the U.S., which is an inter-cabinet committee, CFIUS rushed through permission for Britain to buy Armor Holdings, which is one of three companies which makes armor for Humvees for the troops in Iraq. So CFIUS rushed through permission under the impetus of Treasury Secretary Paulson, but also we've got to investigate Cheney's role. Very likely that he was involved in pushing this through. They rushed through permission in only 30 days, which means no review or the merest pro forma review for BAE to take over Armor Holdings, which means that since BAE already owns one of only three companies which make these armor for the Humvees, if that merger is allowed to go through, they'll own two out of the three companies that do it in the U.S. So one thing that Congress has got to do is overturn that decision of CFIUS, which is illegitimate, which didn't look at any of the factors, as they did in the Dubai Ports World case in 2006, which was far less important and far less vital for national security. The immediate congressional committees which have oversight on that immediately are the banking committees of the House and Senate. They're the committees that have oversight for CFIUS. But they're not the only congressmen that are involved, as was true in the Dubai Ports World case. So the limb in Washington has been making sure to get that off print, which you mentioned of the EIR article, to all congressional committees which are interested, which include not only the financial services banking committees, which are immediately on top, but also defense committees, trade committees, and others. And that's one thing that we should also do in the field. These guys have a responsibility to see that this thing is stopped. One of the few American articles about the BA scandal, as I said earlier, was the LA Times of the 15th, and which reported that a Justice Department preliminary investigation is underway, as I said earlier, which means these congressmen better get on the stick or they'll really look stupid for not having stopped it when the company is being investigated by a DOJ. The LA Times quoted their DOJ sources as saying the BAE matter was too big to ignore. We had to do something.
Hmm. Right, and there is, just to add a few seconds, because it's hard to believe we're approaching the end, there is a 1976 law. It's an antitrust law, And Congress has to, they're the ones that has to see that this is followed. And old BA systems has a time period in which the review is to take place on antitrust, and it was expiring soon. So guess what they did on June 18th? They withdrew their old filing to take over Armour Holdings, and they put a new one, so they'll have some more time. So they're in the hot seat. The time is out on our part, however. And so I just put in one plug. Anyone listening in any way needs to contribute the resources to get out what Linda asked about, all the breaking details of this. And call 800-929-7566 if you want to do it that way. It's toll-free in the United States. And so this is the conclusion, June 23, 2007, of the LaRouche Show. And I thank you, Linda, Ben, Tony. And please stay tuned for next week, the first Saturday in July from 3 to 4 Eastern Time in the United States. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.